It's Friday, the 22nd of April, 2016. Happy birthday to Dewan Blair, Dante Cunningham, and Shelvin Mack. Basketball Monster Show, brought to you by Loot Crate and GGGJ36169. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like GGGJ36169 and sponsor the podcast for an episode, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. So thank you to GGGJ36169. This podcast, as all of the shows, are broadcast live on YouTube. So if you are watching live on YouTube, hello and welcome. And if you want to interact with the show, tweet at me by using my Twitter handle, which you can see below my face, which is at redrock_bball. Bit of an upset in the NBA on Thursday's games. We're going to have all of that action. We're going to preview Friday's game. So
let's get to it.
The monstrous line of the night from Thursday was, of course, James Harden of the Houston Rockets. He put up 58.1 FanDuel points. He played 44 minutes. Scored 35 points, hit 4 triples, 8 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, including the game-winning shot. We were sort of waiting for a big game from Harden. It was terrible in Game 1. It was a bit better in Game 3. And I think I mentioned on yesterday's podcast, he's going to have a big game coming up pretty soon. He's almost a must-play in all DFS lineups throughout the playoffs, as he was for the last 2 to 3 weeks of the season. And he came up big for the Rockets tonight, got them over the line in an upset Game 3. It probably will be their last win for the season, with Steph Curry potentially returning for Game 4. But Houston needed that one, and it gives them a sparkle, a glimmer, maybe. They're still pretty bad, but Harden was fantastic, obviously, with that sort of performance. He was helped ably by the DFS value play of the day for Thursday, and that is one of my boys, Donatas Motiejunas, who was a minimum salary player at $3,500. He turned in 35.6 points out of nowhere, played 31 minutes and went 14-13. He hit 2 triples, had 2 assists, 2 steals, and 1 block. I've been very strongly on the Motiejunas bandwagon all season, aware that he's had a lot of back problems and it's limited what he needs to do, but all we needed to see from him was big minutes, and he's going to produce because he's clearly the best power forward on this team. It's not even close, and I just want him to be able to get going. Now, will this continue to happen for him? Probably not, because it's going to be hard for him to get 30 minutes continually. Look, he'd been trash in a lot of the games, and he'd really struggled through big chunks of the regular season. I still think that they were underutilizing him, and I didn't like the way the Bickerstaff had used him throughout the season, because, as I said, he is clearly the best option for this team at the four. Huge performance. We know he's got it. I know he's got it in him, and he showed everyone here tonight that he's got it in him, but I'm not really sure that's going to be something that's going to be able to continue. Unfortunately, the DFS dud of the night, looking at players here who had the worst performance at a price of over $5,000, and we have to go with Draymond Green of the Golden State Warriors, who was $9,000. He was in a prime position with no Steph Curry playing, and he went 9-7-7 with 1 steal. He blamed himself for the loss after the game. He shot poorly from the field. He shot poorly from the free throw line. He had 7 turnovers as well. Just a horrible, horrible game from Draymond, and all he really needs is to play an average game and the Warriors win. Again, I'm not blaming him for it. He blamed himself for the loss, but it's a horrible performance from a DFS point of view from Draymond Green. Let's look at the perfect DFS lineup from Thursday's action. At point guard, it was Russ Westbrook at 48.5. And as I mentioned yesterday, as soon as Steph was out, and it was looking like Steph wasn't going to play, Sean Livingston at 31.5 was a great option. At shooting guard, Wes Matthews had 34 points, and Jim Harden went for 58.1, as we've already touched on. Matthews hasn't really been that good in the first two games, but that's a nice performance from him. Small forwards, Kev Durant at 44.9, Paul George at 46. Both of those guys are in play every single night in the playoffs as a DFS option. At the power forward spot, well, these are two that are completely, you would have had to pluck them fair out of your ass to get these into a lineup. Motiejunas at 35.6, and Maurice Spates, who led the Warriors in scoring, he had 27.8. He got some extra playing time with Andrew Bogut, limited by foul trouble, but Spates put up a big performance, and he is wont to do that occasionally. It's just not going to be consistent. At center, my boy Enes Kanter went for 36.1, and that lineup would have netted you 362.5 DFS points on FanDuel, would have been really tough. I would be stunned if anyone had that lineup, including Motti, Yunus, and Spates as the two power forwards. Completely nonsensical to really have thought that that was going to happen. All right, I've got a question that's come in here from Daniel Charles. Daniel's a guy who always listens to the show, watches the show live. He says, I have a question. If Mark Jackson wasn't fired, do you think the Warriors would have won a championship? We don't think Kerr did anything different. No. Yes. No. Let me rephrase. Do I think that if Mark Jackson was still the coach, the Warriors would have won a championship? No, I don't. Jackson had a lot of issues with assistant coaches. He grated on a lot of people. His offensive system was almost non-existent at times. And yes, Steph Curry did take a big leap, but I think some of the leap that Curry took was the system that Steve Kerr initiated or allowed to be played. The Draymond Green thing was a little bit fluky with the David Lee injury, and that enabled Green to get in the starting lineup. But I, even before the Lee injury, I was excited about what Green was going to do under Steve Kerr. Kerr knew he had somewhat of a talent there in Green, not probably to this level. But I don't think that Mark Jackson would have led the Warriors to a championship over these last season and to a record win total this year. He is not the same coach as Steve Kerr. He has a lot of issues, a lot of shortcomings as a coach, and Kerr probably has some of them as well, but no, not to the level of Mark Jackson. So Daniel, sorry, I can't agree with you. I'm really struggling with my words today. I can't agree with you there. Let's take a quick minute for a word from one of our sponsors, or today's sponsor, which is Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and you can get 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. Each month, there's a separate theme and a separate theme box. We know that April's one is done and dusted, and the good fellows over at Loot Crate are trying to work on what they're going to do for May. But you can still head across to lootcrate.com/redrock. Use that unique URL to really show the guys at Loot Crate that you're coming from this podcast. Check out what they've got. And if you use my coupon code, which is REDROCK, you save $3 off any new subscription. Check out all the great stuff they've got over there. They've got stuff for pets as well. Loot Pets, I think it's called. A whole range of different options over at Loot Crate. But don't forget to use lootcrate.com/REDROCK and check out all the great stuff that the guys have over there. All right, thank you to Loot Crate again for sponsoring the podcast. Let's get through these games and have a bit of a look in detail. That the Thunder headed to Dallas for Game 3. They lead the SmackDown on the candy asses of the Mavericks. They won by 29 points. We saw that weird sort of performance in Game 2, and it obviously fired the Thunder up to a degree. Westbrook went 26 with 15 assists, 2 steals, and a block. A big night there. Durant had 34, 7, and 3. Not his horrible shooting night from the other night. And Serge Ibaka's looked a lot better in these playoffs. 16 and 6 for Ibaka. 2 threes, 2 blocks on 7 of 9 shooting. This looks more like the Serge Ibaka we'd seen in previous seasons, not the light version we've seen for most of this year. Enes Kanter did Enes Kanter things. He had 21 points in 22 minutes. He had 8 boards. He had a triple one. He went 6 of 7 from the field. He went 8 of 10 from the free throw line. And this is the guy that we didn't see in Game 2, and the guy that I'm a massive fan of, Enes Kanter. You should be well aware of that by listening to this podcast. I talked about Dion Waiters a bit yesterday and said that he is going to have a big game at some point. It happened here. 19, 4, and 3 with 4 triples on 7 of 11 shooting. That probably rules out him being a DFS option in any other games. It's unlikely he has more than one of these games in a 7-game stretch. Andre Robertson was useless. Steven Adams played 23 minutes and went 4 and 6. And the bench didn't do a huge amount. Still Randy Foy siphoning minutes off campaign is making me upset. But it was a game where they could get the bench guys in. So Payne played 4 minutes, and Josh Huestis got his second game of NBA playoff action. For the Mavericks, weird situation. JJ Barea was doubtful, and so was David Lee when we did yesterday's podcast. They both played. Darren Williams was out with his hernia issue. So a weird situation. Barea went straight back to the starting lineup, and he started. He went 15, 2, and 7. He's going to have value as long as Williams remains out, which could be some more games. Ray Felton turned in another stellar performance, 18, 3, and 4 with 4 steals, and Dirk had one of his better games as well, 16, 6, and 5, while Wes Matthews dropped 22 in his 33 minutes. The big question is what happened at center. You got Salah Mejri. We had Zaza Pachulia. Well, Pachulia started, played 19 minutes. Medrick came off the bench, played 14, and Dave Lee played 17 minutes as well. So the return of Lee meant that we're not going to see most likely 20-plus minute games from Petrulia or Mejri, so any of their use in DFS is likely eliminated. And the return of JJ Brayer meant that any opportunity for Justin Anderson to get 25-plus minutes was nipped in the bud there. He had 12 points in his 19 minutes. The Toronto Raptors and the Indiana Pacers, the Raptors get a big victory on the road. I'm massively bullish on the Raptors still, despite that game one loss, and I think they could easily wrap this up in five, as I hope they do, because I did predict that. Damari Carroll had his best game in months. He played 35 minutes, which is the most positive thing, 17-5 with 3 triples. The fact that he's getting those minutes now is going to really reduce what Normie Powell can do. He only played 3 minutes, which, look, was fun while it lasted for Powell, but they're always going to go with Carroll over him as long as Carroll remained healthy, and he did here. Kyle Lowry, 21-4-8. DeMar DeRozan got sort of back in business, only shot 37% but had 21 points. And Jonas Valanciunas, 27 minutes for Jonas. Foul trouble limited him somewhat there, but still, he's an animal on the boards at the moment. That's 14 again for him. He had 19 in game one, had a monster game two. Just 9 points and a block, but he's looking really good at the moment. Corey Joseph's stellar playoffs continued. He gets 24 minutes, and he is a primary backup at the 1 and the 2. And Patrick Patterson only played 26 minutes here. 7-4 with a triple 1, while Luis Scola had 16 minutes in a start. And it's real tough for Scola to continue to play. I'm not sure why he's continuing to get as many minutes as he is. Patterson should be a minimum 30 minutes a night, and Scola maybe 10, if that. He's struggling. He had 3 points in his 16 minutes. On the Pacers, Paul George did everything he could. He had a triple one. He went 25, 10, and 6. But this is what I mentioned, and I don't remember where I mentioned it, whether it was on this podcast yesterday or if it was the Podium Game podcast that I was on with Brian Gibberman yesterday. That Paul George is not going to shoot 55% in every game, and he didn't. He shot 32% here, which is something we'd seen from him quite often during the season. And when that doesn't fall, then a lot of things are going to run into problems with the Pacers. Yan Mihimi did play with that back problem. He only played 24 minutes. He went 7-4. He's really struggling with the back. It's still in pain. He had foul trouble. He's not going to be a great DFS option. Monte Ellis, who was solid in the first two, was terrible. He has 7-6-4. And George Hill had his best playoff game to date, going 13-3-2. The biggest performance was Miles Turner, or the biggest notable performance. He went 17-8 with 3 blocks in 31 minutes. And he started the second half for Lavoie Allen. Allen played 9 minutes and went scoreless. Does that mean we're going to see Turner back in the starting lineup? I think there's a pretty good chance we see that. Allen has just been useless. He hasn't had a good game since moving into the starting lineup. Yes, and Turner's had some bad ones, but Allen hasn't done anything to think that he should be getting minutes while keeping Turner in that 25-minute range. So Turner, even though his price is pretty high in DFS, it won't come down after this. It makes him a little bit of a harder guy to look at, but he's playing better than what he was to end the regular season. Solomon Hill got 28 minutes again. He's continuing to get minutes, and he remains a really decent, cheap DFS option. Look, only 8 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, but at minimum salary, and you're getting 28 minutes, at some point, something's going to happen, and a game is going to come out of nowhere. Rod Stuckey played 17 minutes. Not much else to really talk about on the Pacers. Ty Lawson only got the 7 minutes in this one. The last game of the night was that Warriors and Rockets, the upset victory. For the Rockets, Spates had 22 points in just 18 minutes. He had 3 triples and 4 rebounds. It is completely unreliable to expect that from Spates again. Sean Livingston in the start went 16-5-3 with 3 steals. And really, not much else happening. Andy Bogut played just 15 minutes due to foul trouble, and that enabled Spates to get a little bit more run. Harry Barnes was poor. He only played 23 minutes here. Iguodala went 7-4-3 in his 33 minutes. Klay Thompson was okay, but really not shooting the ball well, only going 7-20. And we saw guys like James Michael McAdoo play. Ian Clark played 21 minutes with Steph out. And he actually played pretty well. 11 points and 5 assists for Clark, but not a good night from the Warriors' point of view. Actually held to under 100 points. On the Rockets, we've talked Jim Harden, we've talked Monta Ellis. Dwight Howard went 13-13 with 2 blocks. A nice performance from Dwight. And his price in DFS at under 7,000, as long as it stays there, is going to be sort of useful because he's playing a little bit better. Mike Beasley went 12-5 in his 21 minutes. It's completely unreliable for him, while Pat Bev played 33 minutes. And Clint Capella, only playing 5 minutes, continues to bother me. I don't mind that while Monta Ellis is playing minutes, but he needs to play more than 5 minutes. He's one of their best players. You could argue he's their second or third best player, Capella. I know plenty of you would like to argue that with me, but he is really, really good, and he's going to be really good, and I can't wait for him to be the starting center on this team next season. But yeah, he's not getting much playing time now. I think he needs to get onto the court more. I do like that Josh Smith only played 5 minutes, and that needs to remain that way. Montiunas, Capella, play Ariza, play some Brewer there, although Brewer's been terrible as well. But we don't need Josh Smith in the game. Okay, that is those games done and dusted. Let's now look ahead to Friday's action. There are three games on. We're heading to game three in all of these series. We're heading to Detroit for the first one, which is Cleveland at Detroit. The Cavs are favored by just 5, and the total is 201 points. Let's look at the point guards in this matchup. We know that it's Kyrie. We know that it's Reggie Jackson. I think both of them are really good plays. Jackson had 35 in the last game. Kyrie had 32. You've got to spend $6,800 for Jackson, $77 for Kyrie. I would probably... look, using, you know that Kyrie's probably going to score more, but you're saving $1,000. So it depends on how else you're structuring your team. But either of these guys would be a fine guy. And you know what? Even having them both together as your backcourt is not a completely dumb decision. There are a couple of other good point guards out there when we look at Atlanta and Boston. We could have Jeff Teague and Isaiah Thomas. But using these two guys, I do really like it. Steve Blake, Matthew Dellavedova. Yeah, Dally had 24 points in the last game in 22 minutes. That's probably unlikely to happen, but in at 3,600, it's obviously a great return. Just don't expect that to happen too often. At shooting guard, we know J.R. Smith is always a great tournament option. He's still at 4,700. He had 28 in the last game. He's got an opportunity to go for 10, or he can go for 30. That's sort of what J.R. Smith does. So look at him in your GPPs. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at 5,600, I think, is a really solid cash game guy. He had 29 in the last game. He's averaging 28 in his last three against Cleveland. He's back home. He generally has consistent runs, and then he has a consistently bad run. Picking when that's going to change is the tough part. But I do like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope here at 5,600. Iman Shumpert does nothing, and the other guys like Darren Hilliard, Jody Meeks, Dante Jones, Jordy McRae, we're not going to be punting on them in DFS. At small forward, LeBron at 10,400. We know how good he is. He only did have 40 points in the last game. But I think that you almost have to use LeBron on this sort of slate and get him in there with the potential for having 50, 55, 60 points. You've got to use him. Marcus Morris at 5,800. I don't mind Marcus Morris at 5,800. I don't love it, though. I think it's an okay play, but clearly not the best. Stan Johnson at 3,500. I love him as a punt option. We heard all the stuff that happened with him in the quotes after the game about him and LeBron, and some of the things were really hilarious that Johnson was saying. Especially when referring to the bench guys on the Pistons about how much they talk. It loved it. He could get absolutely flattened in this game and destroyed, or he could be up for a big one. I like him as a GPP option. Jefferson, Reggie Bullock, James Jones. Not really much to feast on there. At power forward, Toby Harris is at 6,500. He's struggling a little bit at the moment, and the salary's dropped by 100, but it hasn't dropped quite enough. I would much rather take Kev Love. He's at 7,300. He only had 30 in the last game, but he's a 35-point upside guy pretty comfortably. I do like him here. Tristan Thompson has been useless. He's averaging 5 points across his last three games. Now, one of those was that farce of an ending to a regular season, but he only put up 3 points in the last game. Really limited in that one. Now, the salary has dropped by 300, so I don't hate him as a punt option because I don't know if many people will be on him, and maybe he has a game where he grabs 12 rebounds and blocks 2 shots. That is a possibility for Thompson, but I don't love it. At center, Andre Drummond. Look, the salary's dropped. He's down to 7,600. That's making him more appealing. But we've seen all season that opposition centers against the Cavs can't put up numbers. And it's happened to Drummond so far. Less than 30 in the last game, averaging 31 in his last three. Yeah, averages only 32 in the last three against Cleveland. Don't really like it. Baines, Mozgov. No, I don't think we're going to be too interested there. The next game is probably where a lot of your fantasy value is going to come from as well. And that is the Atlanta Hawks and the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are favored by 3 here at home in Boston. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure why the Celtics would be 3-point favorites. I know it's in Boston, but seriously, Avery Bradley makes it tough. Before I get into that question, Zubin Petrao, another great live listener of the show, he says Stephen A. Smith.
Percentages.
Gives me an opportunity to drop that. Stephen A. Smith wants Mark Jackson instead of Kurt Rambis to coach the Knicks next year. Who's worse out of the two? I'll tell you who's the worst out of those two. Kurt Rambis. I'll tell you who's the second worst out of those two. Kurt Rambis. Jackson's bad, but there is nobody worse than Kurt Rambis. Almost in NBA history. He is horrible. Now, Stephen A. Smith has his head up his ass a lot of the time. But I don't hate this. The Knicks should be looking, and I know, and something I was thinking about today is that the last time a coach who had coached for another team won the championship was the Mavericks in 2000 and, I can't even remember, 2011. The other coaches after that, we had Pop, we had Spoelstra, we had Steve Kerr that have won the last four championships. And they've, was it last four? One, two, yeah, last four championships. And they're not retreads. And I'd have to go back, I probably should go back further and look at which coaches have been retreads and won, and coaches who have, you know, had previous coaching experience. But a lot of the time, it's I don't see the point of it. Hire an assistant. Get someone new. Get Ettore Messina from the Spurs. Get someone like that in. Not Mark Jackson. Like, he didn't leave Golden State on good terms because it just seemed like he was a shit bloke. And the coaching wasn't great as well. So yes, he's much better than Kurt Rambis, but that's really not saying much. Let's get back to the game. The Celtics, the Hawks, Isaiah Thomas at 7,900, really struggling to live up to that 7,900 price tag. But in saying that, the salary's dropped by $900. So that's appealing. But even so, the numbers he's been putting up haven't really been at 7,900 value. But I can completely get behind using him at that salary. Jeff Teague also dropped by $900. He's down to $7,000 now. And he only had 25 in game two. Now, heading to Boston, the defense is a bit of a concern, but Avery Bradley makes it a bit more palatable. But either of these guys could be used as well. Now, I like Jackson, I like Irving better than Thomas and Teague, but I can understand having Thomas and Teague as a backcourt as well. I'm just not as keen given their respective price points. Thomas is the highest priced point guard that's out on the board. Dennis Schroeder is dealing with an ankle issue, so wouldn't be using him anyway. Terry Rozier at minimum salary, he played 24 minutes in game two. He's at seven. He put up 17 points, and he is definitely at 3,500. 17 points is nothing to be sneezed at. He did have his best. It was his best career game, but if you're throwing multiple tournament lineups out there, you know, Rozier, at that salary, if he gets you 17 points, if he gets you 18, if he gets to 20 points, it's tremendous. Not banking on it, but it's something to pay attention to. I would take Rozier over Schroeder at this point. Shooting guards, Evan Turner has dropped by he's dropped by $800. He's now at 5,200. I love him at 5,200. Marcus Smart has dropped by 700. He's now at 4,900. I do like Smart at 4,900. He is more of a tournament play, not a cash game play at 4,900, but we know he's got the ability to drop a 30, to drop a 35, and at 4,900, that could be great. Same with Kyle Korver. Now, he's risen up to 3,900, but that's not enough to totally dissuade me from using him. Using him in cash is really tough, but in a tournament, we saw in the last game, he put up 32, but the Celtics were well aware of what Korver did, and they were pissed that they let him do it, so there is no way they're going to leave him as open as they did in game two, so that makes me be a little bit weary about using Korver. Tim Hardaway, RJ Hunter, not much to really look at with those guys. At small forward, Jay Crowder at 5,700. I don't mind it, but I would rather take the 5,500 on Kent Bazemore. Bazemore's been averaging more than Crowder for big chunks of time. In terms of defense, Bazemore has a much better matchup than what Crowder does. Yeah, Crowder's a better player, but I'm saving $200 and his production's actually been better than him lately. Thabo Sefolosha had 25 points in game two. He's at 3,600. If you want a cheap small forward in there and potentially get yourself 20 points, even if it's 18 points, Thabo's not a bad guy to look at. Mike Scott's also in consideration at minimum salary. He's averaging 17 points across his last three. He had 17 in the last game. He's clearly the first big off the bench. I'm not sure why FanDuel continually lists him as a small forward when he's clearly a power forward. But he can get out there, he can get 17 points. He's going to play the bulk of those minutes behind Horford and Millsap, and I think you have to look at him. Speaking of Millsap, Paul Millsap's salary has dropped by a cool $1,000. He's at now 8,500. He had a terrible game too. I am smashing him in this one. I think 8,500. Him and LeBron, you form the main core of your team, I reckon, at those big high price points and try and fit some other guys around him. Love Millsap here. Jonas Jerebko's at 3,500. He had 16 points in game two. It doesn't appear like Kelly Olynyk is going to play. If Olynyk is out, then Jerebko at 3,500 is a guy that I could slot in next to Millsap and use that as my power forward pairing. Jared Sullins has dropped by $900 down to 5,600, and that's not enough. I won't be using him. Same with Mike Muscala. At center, Al Horford is a a pretty decent guy to look at. 7,800, he's dropped by $700. He's averaging 38 points across his last three games against the Celtics, had 36 in game two. You feel like you're just going to get 35 to 39 points basically every night that Al Horford gets out there. I'd really love to see Kelly Olynyk do well, but with the shoulder and unlikely to play, not keen. But I do like Amir Johnson at 4,700. He's averaging 27 the last three times out against Atlanta. He had 26 in game two. I think that at 4,700, he's a really good option if you're looking for a cheap center to go with. The next game could be another massacre, the Spurs and the Grizzlies. One of these games the Grizzlies is going to keep within 15 points. Maybe it's this one. I'm not confident. And when that happens, the guys like Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge will play more than 26 minutes. But it's tough to rely upon that. In terms of DFS value, it's just cheap point guards for the Grizzlies. Xavier Munford's at 3,500. He played 27 minutes in the last game. Jordy Farmar's at 3,500, minimum salary. He played 31 minutes in the last game. Now, Munford had 16 points. Farmar had 13 points. So they're not doing much. But the fact that they're getting the minutes and they're at minimum salary, both of those guys need to be considered. I would prefer Munford because he has played more minutes than Farmar majority of the time, and he has outproduced him on a DFS point of view. Patty Mills hasn't exceeded 20 minutes in either of the first two games. He's at 3,600, and he is worth looking at. He had 17 points in game two. He's going to have a decent opportunity to get over 20 points. Tone Parker is now dropped by $700. That makes him interesting. At 4,800, can Tone Parker get to 20, 25 points? You have to think that the Grizzlies might stay close to really consider him, but if they stay close and he gets 30 minutes, it's a great investment. He is a tournament play to me. At shooting guard, Danny Green, real tough to rely upon him. The minutes aren't there, the production's not there. And Manu Ginobili at 3,700, maybe those guys. It's really hard to use him. Lance Stevenson played 9 minutes in game two. He's dropped to 4,400. I don't care. I'm not using him at 4,400. Tony Allen at 4,600 hasn't cracked past 22 minutes in the first two games. Not interested there either. And Kevin Martin's been getting more minutes than I've anticipated. He hasn't done enough with him though at minimum salary, so we'll leave him alone. Kawhi hasn't played 30 minutes yet. His salary's dropped by $900. He's down to 8,700, so that's mildly interesting. But you have to think the Grizzlies will keep it close to use him. And the same's going to go for LaMarcus Aldridge in the next game. Matty Barnes at 5,500, that's a big salary drop too. It's coming more to what we consider usable for Barnes, but I'm still not keen with Kawhi Leonard on him. And Vincent Carter at 3,500. He's down to minimum salary. I think you can use Carter as a cheap option. He only had 11 points in the last game. He is worth looking at. Not a must play by any stretch. Power forward, you know what I'm going to say about LaMarcus Aldridge. The other guys, Boris Diaw, David West, not interesting. Jermichael Green hasn't played 20 minutes in either of the two games. He's at 4,500, and Zach Randolph is now down to 6,800. And 6,800 for Zebo, I can use him at 6,800. I think that's worthwhile. It's not the best out there, but it is worthwhile. At center, we've got Timmy Duncan at 5,300, and I don't mind Tim Duncan at 5,300 if you're looking for a mid-price center. Now, I don't necessarily think you should be, and there are other guys out there that I would much rather fill in my center spot, like Al Horford. But Duncan, you can get 24 out of him, 25, and at 5,300, it's not bad value. The Birdman at minimum salary, probably not. Boban, probably not either. Just an ugly, ugly game. Look, but one of these games, the Grizzlies will keep it closer, and maybe these guys play a couple extra minutes, but predicting when that's going to happen is the real tough part. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day. At point guard, Xavier Munford at 35, Reggie Jackson at 68, and Kyrie at 77. At shooting guard, Marcus Smart, 49, Evan Turner, 52, and there's no shooting guard priced over 7,500 on Friday's slate. Small forwards, Thabo at 36, Bazemore at 55, and LeBron at 10,400. The power forwards, Jonas Jerebko, minimum salary 35, Kevin Love, 73, and Paul Millsap, 85. The centers, Amir Johnson, 47, Timmy Duncan, 53, and Al Horford, 7,800. We are done today, guys. Make sure, if you get a chance, leave a review for this podcast. It helps out enormously. And a thumbs up on YouTube would go a long way as well. I'd love to see everyone who watches on YouTube give a thumbs up. That would be awesome. Thank you if you could do that. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball and basketballmonster at baskmonster. Good luck. Good luck to your team if they're in the playoffs. Good luck setting your DFS lineup. Good luck if you're in a dynasty or keeper league and you're making trades. Good luck destroying your opposition in those trades. And you can always tweet me questions about what I think about trades in that sort of situation. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.